Many of us have those stubborn pounds that seem impossible to lose, no matter how good we eat or how hard we work out. My solution is PlushCare. PlushCare is a leading telehealth provider with doctors who are there for you day and night to partner with you in your weight loss journey. They can prescribe FDA-approved weight loss medications like Wegovy and Zepbound for those who qualify. Plus, they accept most insurance plans. To get started, visit plushcare.com/weightloss. That's plushcare.com/weightloss.
Hi-yo. Welcome to Kids Book Tales. My brother's name is Ollie and I'm Guy Boy. Thank you for listening from Mommy's podcast. See you later.
Kia ora and welcome back to another episode of Kiwi Birth Tales. Thank you so much for being here. I am your host, Jordan. I'm a mum of two. I've got Jai, who is almost four, and Ali, who's just turned two. We live in the beautiful Papamoa in New Zealand, and I also have a business baby, which is your birth project. Your birth project you need in your life if you're pregnant or you know someone who is. It is the best way to create your best birth. It's an online hypnobirthing course, and it's designed around being inclusive of all birth types. It's got a specific section in there for birth partners. If you've got a birth partner who needs to learn a little bit more about birth, then that is the best place to start. There are so many sections in the course, and I just know that it helps so many mums create their best birth. There are thousands of testimonials from mums who've done the course, so make sure you go and check that out. There will be a price increase from the start of 2024 because there's a lot of additions coming to the course, and if you secure it now, you will get access to all of the new content at the same price as well. So you'll get to keep that for 9 months. You get access to everything for 9 months. You can review the course and do it as many times as you like within that time. So make sure you go and check that out. All right, today I'm speaking to Millie, and Millie's got two pregnancy and birth stories to share with us, and they are both totally different. I'll let Millie do the talking. But she does such a fantastic job of sharing her stories. Her second one was not without challenges in her pregnancy. And both pregnancies, they've needed some support to get pregnant through fertility associates. So it's a really interesting episode. I know you're going to enjoy it. And if you have or have suffered from placenta previa, I think this is also an interesting one for you as well, because that was part of Millie's second birth journey. So I hope you love the episode. I would love to hear from you if you want to find me at Kiwi Birth Tales or at Your Birth Project on Instagram, or you can find me, Jordan with a Y, at kiwibirthtales.com. Okay, enjoy the episode and I will be back in your ears soon.
Hi, Millie. Thanks so much for joining me on the Kiwi Birth Tales podcast today. Why don't you tell us a little bit about you and who is in your family?
So I am Millie, married to Willie, and we have two beautiful kids, our daughter Lennon, who is 3.5, and our little boy Reggie, who is 11 weeks.
Awesome. Those are cute names. Did you know that you wanted to, before we even get into your pregnancy journey, did you have them from the start, or where did those names come from?
Yeah, so with Lennon, I love the name for either a boy or a girl, and we didn't find out the gender for that pregnancy, so it was kind of easy that way. We were like, whatever the baby is, it'll be called Lennon. And then with Reggie, that is my grandfather's name, so something a little bit special. Lovely.
Yeah, I love Lennon too for both a boy and a girl. It's such a nice name.
Yeah, and she so suits it.
Yeah, amazing. Cool, awesome. Well, we're going to work through your pregnancy and birth journey today and your just journey as a mother. So we've got lots to talk about. But why don't you start us off with your journey to pregnancy?
I have endometriosis and had a couple of surgeries to remove the endo and, you know, see how bad it was. Then we started trying to conceive with no luck for about 18 months and went to fertility associates for some extra help. Then we had kind of a plan going forward in different stages, and we started the first stage, which was started taking Clomiphene, was on the third month of that, and then on the fourth month they decided to monitor it with scans just for a little bit more assurance that we were getting everything right and the dates and stuff. And yeah, that one worked. And had a blood test. Well, I actually secretly did the pregnancy test. even though they tell you not to. And it was positive, so went for the blood test. And that literally like an hour later was like the first person at the door at the lab test to get in for my blood test. And then it must have been a couple of hours later they called me and said that it was positive and I was pregnant, which was super exciting.
Amazing. And just before we talk a little bit more about that, with your like trying to conceive for around 18 months, were you getting any support from like your GP or anybody else that was helping you on that journey, or were you sort of just left on your own for that period of time and then you sort of went and tried to find help after that? How did that all work out?
Yeah, so I had been working with my gynecologist who was helping with the endo stuff a little bit, but also going down the natural supplements and things like that. So taking supporting herbs to help alongside that fertility. And we had gotten on the list to do IVF, so it was kind of like we knew that we had about a year of trying other methods prior.
Cool. And once you found out that you were pregnant, how were you feeling? How did you find those first few weeks of knowing you were pregnant? And did you get many symptoms along that period of time?
Yeah, so I couldn't believe that it was positive. I think I did like 10 pregnancy tests. Because the first one I did that came up slightly positive was like the faintest line. And I was like, it can't be. I'm just seeing the line because I want to see it. And was Googling like, you know, positive pregnancy test pictures and all that kind of thing. So I couldn't really believe that I was actually pregnant from just from the pregnancy test. And yeah, it still seemed very unreal until it was just before we were getting our dating scan, which must have been at about 6 or 7 weeks. I started feeling a little bit nauseous, which was exciting because it was only a tiny bit, not enough to be super sick yet. And then the dating scan was also, you know, very reassuring that we were actually pregnant and I was growing a baby. And then from that point on, the morning sickness definitely ramped up. I was probably nauseous all the time, all day, for until about 13 weeks, so it wasn't too bad.
And did you find a midwife in that time? Like, who did you decide to go with for your care, and how did you find that process?
Yeah, so my mum was a qualified midwife. She's now does antenatal classes. So she wasn't practicing or anything, but she had recommendations of people she knew in that profession and people she would recommend. And so I went with one of them. One of the ladies who, I had a really nice connection with, and was also, you know, in the same town.
Awesome. Cool. And talk us through your sort of thoughts around testing and pregnancy. Did you do all of the standard testing that was on offer?
Yes. Yeah, we did all of the testing, and scans that they needed us to do. We didn't find out the gender, like I said, just because we didn't mind either way. And
and I don't know how you had the self-control to not find out. I'm just so nosy, I think, like with pregnancies. I'm like, who is this little person inside of me? But I think it's so cool to have a surprise.
I don't know how we did it either, to be honest, because we did find out with our second. And I could not wait to get to that 20 weeks. So I still am like, how did I hold on for that long? But somehow a miracle.
Cool. Awesome. And how were you feeling like as your pregnancy sort of went on through the second trimester and you managed to get over that nauseous morning sickness, but all day sort of feeling? How did you find the second trimester?
Yeah, I was feeling really good. I was active, still working full time. Just super excited. Yeah, it was all of those exciting feelings. And yeah, the energy came back, and I was feeling great. It was a really good pregnancy. I had a little at about 24 weeks, I started feeling slightly crampy one morning. And then went into hospital to get checked, and everything was absolutely perfect. I don't know what was going on, but then, yeah, it was smooth sailing from that point.
Yeah, cool. Awesome. And what about birth education? Did you do antenatal classes or anything to help you prepare for birth?
Yeah, so we, up until a certain point, I was planning for a home birth. Because my mum had had home, like really positive home births with both me and my sister. And so we did hypnobirthing classes, and then we did antenatal classes as well, which, yeah, were both amazing.
Yeah, awesome. Cool. And as you got through the sort of third trimester, were you doing anything in terms of preparing for birth, like antenatal expressing or raspberry leaf tea dates, all of the stuff that is out there that you can try? What were you doing anything?
Yeah, so I had started doing pregnancy yoga classes to get my body kind of prepared, and baby in the right position, and then had started doing some of the spinning babies exercises,
Oh, cool.
that were recommended by our midwife. And then I went like from I guess about 39 weeks, I started drinking the raspberry leaf tea, the dates, the spicy curries, the side stair walking, all of the things in
Yeah, me too. I was like
anticipation.
just desperate. Yeah, awesome, cool. And talk us through that final sort of week of pregnancy. How were you feeling? Did you end up going into spontaneous labor? What were your plans if that happened? So what were you thinking about how you wanted your birth to go? And then talk us through what actually happened.
Yeah, so our plan really, like I said, I wanted initially a home birth, but then changed my mind kind of, towards the end, just thinking that I really wanted to be in the water and to not have to have a setup at home, really. That was the main criteria. And we lived like 5 minutes down the road from birth care in Auckland. So it was really easy. That was our plan, to birth at birth care in the water. And then, yeah, that final week, time went pretty slow, and it was like the thick of summer. It was hot, so I was kind of just like sitting around sweating. And then I was 30, sorry, 40 weeks and 5 days. And that morning, I started to feel something kind of different, but still carried on with my day as normal, because I had listened to, other podcasts and other birth stories, and how they were like, your labor can go on for 5 days, so don't jump at anything initially. So I was like trying to keep my mindset really calm, like, this could take a while, let's just carry on as normal. And then, yeah, things definitely started to kind of like slowly, just get a little bit more painful, mild kind of cramps throughout the day. Then that night, I was like, well, before things kind of kicked off, I guess I was like, okay, let's go get a spicy curry. Let's like make sure things are gonna keep moving. And I remember I went to Paradise in Sandringham, and the lady was like, how spicy do you want it? And I was like, I want this baby to come out. My husband and I look like laugh about it to this day, thinking that she probably looked at the chef and was like, you know what to do, like, you know what to add in there. Anyway, so we had that, and then my husband actually had a nap, and I was just like relaxing until probably about 10 p.m. Things started increasing, and I was like, I think we should probably start like putting on the timer and seeing how far apart these contractions are going. At that time, I called my mum, who was like 20-minute drive away, so she started making her way over. And yeah, things kind of started increasing, in pain, I guess, times were getting a lot shorter between contractions. And probably when she arrived, which might have been like 10 or 10:30, my mum, at the end of every contraction, I then started feeling really nauseous. And then I started throwing up, which, yeah, wouldn't recommend having a carrier that close to pregnant, that close to birth ever
oh
again.
Oh my God, as if you need like the throwing up as well as the contractions, right? Like, yeah, just do not need it. Yeah.
I know. And I, you know, had no rest period really. So I was like contracting and then I was throwing up and then I was kind of like recovering from being sick as well. So there wasn't much rest. So it did go pretty quick, to be honest. Who knows if that's why, but everything definitely did speed up. And then the midwife came around to check me, possibly at around 1 o'clock to see how everything was going. She did a VE, and had then also recommended to try a couple of positions of the spinning babies, the side lying one. Throughout a contraction, which I did a couple of when she was there, which were just excruciating, but I guess helped. And then, she said I was about 4 or 5 centimetres at that point, and that she would plan to meet me at birth care in about 4 or 5 hours, which at that point I felt really kind of like, oh my goodness, how am I going to keep doing this for 4 or 5 hours at home as well? We were in quite a small apartment in Auckland and it was, you know, summer, it was hot, and not much space. And I was like, oh gosh. At that point, mum thinks from her experience, I was actually going into transition. The midwife had already left. And from, you know, I was starting to shake. I was, you know, verbally saying that I was like, you know, had, you know, was at a peak. And so mum was like, okay, I think we should start, you know, preparing ourselves to go to birth care now. She started, you know, she called the midwife and told her that was our plan. At that point I was like, whoa, I felt a shift. And I was like, I can feel the baby's head. I was like, I am, I'm pushing. Like, I can't stop pushing. Like, what's happening? And it was kind of out of confusion because it was like, hang on, like, this shouldn't be happening at this stage. And then mum was kind of like confused also. So anyway, we started to make our way down to the car, which was in the car park. So I was contracting and involuntary pushing, like, a couple of times before we even got out of the apartment, like walking down the hallway. I remember stopping and like holding and contracting and like literally holding my crutch being like, whoa. In the elevator again, we made it to the car and then the same thing all the way to birth care. I had another contraction outside of the car and I'm standing there like, the midwife comes over and like gets me and helps me and we go into the elevator at birth care and then I'm still same situation. Race down into the birthing suite, and they're trying to see if they can hear the baby's heartbeat, but now we know that the baby was way too far down. And literally kind of like pulled my pants down, one contraction and her head was out.
Oh my gosh.
And then they were like, okay, next contraction, you know, like push the baby out type scenario. And then there she was and it was just, so fast and crazy. And then I'm sitting there kind of holding her, everything's all going on. And then like 15 minutes later, the midwife comes in and she said like, I can't remember what, I can't remember the wording, but my mum was like, the baby's here.
Oh my gosh. Yeah. It must like, do you remember how far along you were when the midwife did your vaginal examination at your house?
So she had said that it was about 4 or 5 centimetres.
Okay.
But who knows, like that could have, it might have been wrong. It was a small room, it was dark, like I don't know.
Which could have been the spinning babies exercise.
Who knows what it was? Could have been the curry.
Oh my gosh, could have been anything.
So it all that kind of second part of it happened really quick. And I remember sitting there holding Lennon, and the pool was sitting next to me, and they were the water was still, you know, they were still trying to fill it up, and I was like, oh, that sucks.
And how were you, like, how were you feeling when she was born? Like, do you remember being like, oh my gosh, I can't believe that's happened so quickly? Or were you just totally overwhelmed by the fact that she was there? Like, what was that part of your birth like?
It was definitely more kind of shock, and because it had all kind of happened so quickly, and not in a very like nice, calming, lush way that I had planned with the music and the essential oils and the bath. It was none of that. So it was definitely shock. And I remember even them, the midwives who were on at birth care, obviously they were the ones who kind of delivered the baby. They were like, oh, Willie, what is the gender? And he was like, oh, you know, we kind of even forgotten that that was something we didn't know, you know?
And how did you feel finding out that she was a girl?
Kind of shocked. I think we had thought it was a boy. But also because everything was so intense, it was kind of like a minute part of her, like the baby being there, if that makes sense. Which is really funny because before, like, finding out the gender at a scan, it's so intense and you're so excited. But when it actually happened in the birth, it was like the tiniest little snippet.
And did you need any stitches or anything like that from your birth?
Yeah, so I had a second degree tear, and the midwife was doing some stitches post birth while Lennon was having skin to skin with Willie, which seemed to take forever, to be honest, the stitching process.
And they obviously give you like a local anesthetic injection. Do you remember that being like uncomfortable? Do you remember the stitches part of your birth?
Yeah, a tiny bit. It was a little bit stingy, and because it was all kind of like so intense and stuff, I kind of just wanted it to just stop and be finished, and me to kind of just like take a breath and not have anyone touch me. it wasn't too bad.
And did you do they help you to latch Lennon on initially? Like, how did you find that initial feed?
Yeah, so they did help me. She didn't latch like super well. I was kind of like in a funny lying down position as well, so no wonder she didn't have a super good latch.
Cool. And how did you find like the next couple of hours and that sort of first day and night in birth care, and how long did you stay there for? Talk us through the next few days.
So we went to our room at birth care, and I remember just like lying in bed looking over at the little bassinet with Lennon in it and being like, holy shit, like that was a ride. Being like, we're parents now, like crazy. And then I remember them saying, okay, you should rest and have a nap now, and I was like, are you kidding? Like, I'm tired, but I'm so wired, like there was no way I could have slept in that moment. And then we were there for a couple of days. Breastfeeding was quite tricky. Her latch was still not good. I found it really painful with every feed. And I remember the midwives who came around, who were working at birth care, you know, would be like, you know, keep trying, keep resisting, like you're doing good. Even though I was still in heaps of pain, and they could see that. And then it wasn't till maybe our last day that I had a really lovely midwife came on, and she saw me try latch and feed, and she was like, no, this isn't, you can't leave like this. Let's get a lactation consultant round to come and check Lennon's tongue tie and your latch and everything. And that all happened really quick, like that she came around half an hour later, checked the latch, and they said that, yeah, Lennon had a little bit of tongue tie, and they would get the paediatrician to come around and snip it. And it all just was super quick, like all within kind of half an hour. Her latch, you know, hadn't really changed at that point, I think, just because the damage was done. But that midwife also did suggest to get some nipple shields and start using them just so we can kind of work with the latch and help heal my nipples as well, which was the best suggestion because, I ended up using those for, I think it was about 6 weeks, which were great, but also by the end I was so over trying to find these little clear shields in the middle of the night and cleaning them that. We managed to get ahead with the breastfeeding, which was great because I was really committed to being able to do that.
Awesome. Cool. And how did you find going home from birth care? Like, you've got this new little person in your family and you're literally, your whole life's changed like overnight. So how did you find taking Lennon home, and what was the adjustment to parenthood like for you guys, and how did you find the next few weeks?
So the first couple of weeks were quite tough. I remember, you know, baby blues setting in when the milk came in, and I just like sitting around in the afternoon just uncontrollably crying at anything. I remember just sitting on the couch feeding Lennon for hours. She was a real cluster feeder, and I was just so emotionally fragile that my husband was like, what can I do? Like, what kind of like TV show do you want to watch? What do you want to eat? Like, is there anything I can do to cheer you up? And I remember we were just scrolling through like all of the comedy movies to try just get me happy and like in a good space. And I remember watching Magic Mike, and my husband was like, I can't believe I'm allowing this, but okay. Just try to get some kind of laughter going. And he had gone back to work pretty soon after she was born, so it was quite full on. She didn't sleep very well during the day. I look back onto it and she was having such big awake windows. The night times weren't too crazy, but it was the daytime naps that we really struggled with. And I remember her not kind of being a super settled baby. She was either, you know, cluster feeding or wanting contact naps. She was one of those little bubbers.
And how did you find, like, mentally, I know you mentioned the baby blues, but it's just such an adjustment, I think, like going from no children to one, and experiencing like all of those different things, like having an unsettled baby or the cluster feeding, and you've got like the added layer of nipple shields and things like that. Like, how did you find mentally that you were able to maybe pull yourself out of those baby blues, or did you think it was just more a matter of time and then that sort of feeling you just didn't notice as much anymore?
Yeah, I think I really struggled with the anticipation of nighttime and what was to come. You know, and that's, I think, why I was sitting in the afternoons where I was thinking, oh gosh, like, what kind of night are we in for? Another night of, you know, this Groundhog Day. There wasn't really much I personally did or tried to do to get out of it. I guess in the back of my mind knew that eventually it would go. Because it wasn't an all day thing. Like, I didn't feel like I was, you know, in for postnatal depression. It was definitely, you know, like set in a particular time of day. So I remember talking to like my mom and other friends who had had babies, and even my midwife, and they were like, you know, just give it time. It should kind of phase out by a couple of weeks. Kind of had to settle in and know that it was all just a part of the you know, the body's process.
And how did you find your physical recovery from birth, like with the stitches and quite a like fast, I guess, second half of your labour and the sort of shock that your body would have been feeling from that too. How did you find your recovery that way?
Yeah, so the stitches and everything were fine. I did the old like water bottle trick when I was going to the bathroom.
Oh, yeah.
And they actually healed really quick. To be honest, everything was so numb and kind of like swollen that it all kind of just, it was like an out of bounds place. I just kind of didn't pay any attention, wore the adult diapers and didn't really focus on it. So yeah, it was, it did heal up pretty quickly. The nipples were obviously a little bit slower with the nipple shields. But recovery wise, I was okay. I think mentally, I probably had a little bit of like temporary PTSD just because of the pace of everything. And of course, you know, like you try not have these expectations of what and how you want your birth plan or preference to be, but you still like, I was still kind of almost felt robbed of a birth that had been, you know, for 9 months you plan this one particular day. And not even so much about once the baby's here, it's like seems to be all about the birth. And mine was kind of like taken so quick that I was like, hang on, like we had talked about this day for so long and it's been gone, and I, you know, nothing kind of happened that I wanted to happen. So really, I think I struggled with that for a wee while, just and people were like, no, you had a great birth. It was, you know, like people would be so envious of having a quick speedy birth, and I'm like, well, you know, the grass is always greener. Sort of having a low, slow, relaxed birth and labor in the pool and just kind of like being really present to it was sounding quite appealing to me. So I think people will always want what they didn't have, I guess.
It's so interesting, isn't it? Like I think we've all got our different like perspectives on what a positive birth experience is or what your ideal birth experience would have been. And I think you need to like be able to hold space for the fact that like you can grieve for a birth that you wanted and didn't get, even if other people might think that your birth was a really positive one. So I think it's important to call out.
Absolutely.
Yeah, cool. And how did you go with the breastfeeding? I know that you said that you used the nipple shields until about 6 weeks. So did you continue breastfeeding after that? And yeah, talk us through that.
Yeah, I did. Lennon was a hungry wee gal, and she fed, breastfed till she was about 2.5. It was actually quite hard to wean her, to be honest. She probably would still be feeding to this day if she could. But I think I had gotten to the point of I was really busy, had started a business and was kind of at capacity. And being, you know, physically stimulated and touched out wasn't making me the best mum anymore. And so something had to give. And we knew that she was healthy enough and old enough to go without it. So, yeah, we had to wean her at 2.5 years. But, yeah, she had a good time.
And did you find, like, I know I've spoken to mums on the podcast and through the Kiwi Birth Tales Instagram, when they weaned their child, they had like a really significant hormone shift or like noticed a really big change in their body. Did you feel any of that when you weaned Lennon?
No, I didn't actually, which was lucky. Maybe mentally I was so ready to stop. And it was my choice, I guess, as well. So I was almost more excited than anything, kind of negative noticeable change.
And you know, mention that you started a business, was that like while you were postpartum with Lennon? Do you want to talk us through that journey?
So we moved from Auckland to Whanganui when Lennon was one, and I thought I wanted to be a stay-at-home mum forever. But, you know, you never know what it's going to be like. And I think when she was 1.5, I was like, okay, like either we need to possibly have another baby or what am I going to do with my career? Like something was kind of changing and shifting in me. And the business thing happened. I'm a beauty therapist, and in Whanganui there wasn't anywhere that I, yeah, I guess my career kind of aligned with using natural products. And so I found the perfect space for a clinic to go in. And yeah, everything kind of just blossomed from there. So it's called The Slow, and it's, yeah, using all natural and non-toxic products for different beauty treatments, so mainly specializing in hands-on facials.
Awesome. Very cool. Yeah. And we obviously know that you've got little Reggie now as well. So talk us through that conception journey. Did you try and conceive without support? And yeah, what happened on the journey to pregnancy with him?
Yeah, so it was when Lennon was about 2.5 that I felt kind of like ready to be able to have another baby. And I was like, okay, let's, you know, give it 3 months of us naturally trying to conceive and see what happens from then. And then if nothing, we will contact Fertility Associates again and kind of start that again if we needed to. 3 months rolled by, nothing happened. And I was like, oh, here we go again, like back to the devastating period arrival, and then noticing everyone else around me was having their next baby and all that kind of pressure. So contacted Fertility Associates. There isn't a clinic in Whanganui, but they have one in Wellington. So we were kind of working with them through Zoom and phone calls. They didn't have an appointment to even talk to me on the phone for like 2 months. So I was like, okay, we'll take what we can get and try in between then. And then they had a cancellation, so we could talk to them a month earlier. And the plan was to start the medication again, but they wanted to try doing letrozole, which is another fertility drug. And it was a little bit easier for us to do based in Whanganui, as you didn't need any scan or monitoring with it. There were lesser side effects, and it was free because you didn't need the monitoring. So we were like, okay. And it was just before Christmas, I think it was. So we're like, let's try that for 3 months and see if we can do anything. And then if not, we'll go into clomiphene, which is how we conceive Lennon. And we kind of knew that that had worked for us. So we had a little bit of a plan. We'd also gone back onto the list for IVF funding for, you know, whenever that was to roll about. And then, yeah, we managed, it was first month of letrozole, nothing. And then the second month, I was super antsy and doing pregnancy tests, like on like when my period was still not due for another week, and I was still like doing pregnancy tests like every day. Like I just couldn't help myself. I was like, come on, just another one. It was almost like a drug. I was addicted to it. And then I had done 3 pregnancy tests that month and still nothing. And my period was due the next day. And I was like, screw it, let's just do one more. And it was, I had run out of like pregnancy tests, but I still had old pregnancy tests from back with Lennon. And they were like the doctor ones, and they actually looked just like COVID tests. I remember doing it and then, you know, giving Lennon some breakfast or something, coming back and was like, holy shit, that is 2 lines. That is 100% 2 lines. And Willie was at work, so I called him and he was like, you know, obviously in shock and everything. And I was still a little bit apprehensive because I was like, these are old tests, you know, like maybe that pregnancy doubt started to creep in like it did with Lennon. And so I went and bought some more tests, and yeah, straight away they came up positive, so we knew that we're pregnant, which is so amazing.
Amazing, awesome. And once you sort of did the, like, I'm sure you still had to do the the testing through Fertility Associates or like a blood test or whatever to check that you were pregnant, but once you knew for sure, how were you feeling? How did your first trimester go this time around? Was it different to your pregnancy with Lennon?
I had the normal blood test just to, I guess, check that I even was pregnant. That was a bit of a fail actually, because the lab tests had lost my bloods. So I was sitting around texting and calling the lab test, being like, lab clinic to be like, have I got my results? Like, where are they? And then no one could figure out where they were. And then I ended up having to go in and do the test again. So it was quite a stressful time. I was like, I just wanted to know if I was actually pregnant. And then, yeah, I was when the other test came back. And then I started feeling nauseous probably at about 6 weeks, but it was like came on, thick and fast. Like I was throwing up all day, every day. And did, I was really, really sick. And I remember taking the prescribed anti-nausea pills. I took two different ones and they did absolutely nothing. Found one that worked and it was like a miracle. So I was able to just kind of get through the day. And I remember lying in bed and my husband would bring me like a piece of toast and I'd eat it still lying down. Then I'd take my anti-nausea and I'd have to let it all settle in for like 20 minutes. And then finally I was able to like move out of the bed slowly. So it was a really rough time. There were lots of times where I would call mum and be like, can you come and take Lennon to school? Because I can't get up. And it was just me working at the clinic. So there was so much pressure and anxiety and stress within that, having to cancel clients and days just because I physically couldn't move without throwing up, and had spent, you know, a few trips to ED getting fluids just because I couldn't keep anything down. So it was definitely different to my first pregnancy just because of the sickness. It was relentless till about 16 weeks I felt like that.
And did they diagnose you with like hyperemesis or anything like that, or was it just really bad morning sickness?
They kind of like vaguely did. And I guess they didn't want to say that too early to make me afraid that it wasn't going to stop throughout the pregnancy as well. So that was my big concern, thinking, gosh, what if this goes through to 40 weeks? You know, like this is going to be a really long pregnancy.
And how did you feel about like all of the testing in your pregnancy this time around? I know that you found out the sex in this pregnancy. So yeah, talk us through your experience with that this time.
So the same tests and everything. We just did the, you know, standard testing for the Down syndrome screening and the scans and everything. So we did have it was at about 11 weeks when I had a bleed. So we hadn't got into that 12 week mark where they do the scan and everything yet. And that was really scary. I remember calling or texting the midwife, being like, I've had a bleed, I'm not sure, like, and they were kind of checking the colour and all that kind of thing. And here in Whanganui, there's an early pregnancy clinic, but they only open in the morning. And I think it was like...
Life is full of awesome what-ifs, and some not so much, like unexpected medical costs. That's why United Healthcare provides Health Protector Guard fixed indemnity insurance plans to supplement your primary plan and help manage out-of-pocket costs. Learn more at uh1.com.
1 o'clock that the bleed happened. So they were like, she was like, you'll have to wait till tomorrow morning to go in for a scan and to be seen by anyone. So that was really hard. It was a really long day. As Lennon went to mum's, and me and Willie were kind of just literally sitting around on the couch, just thinking the worst, thinking that we were miscarrying. Because more blood started to come. It was never that much. It was kind of only a little bit of spotting on a pad. But yeah, there was a lot of anxiety around going to the bathroom and just, yeah, it was a really horrible time. And then we went in the morning, we went to the early pregnancy clinic for a scan. And they scanned and were like, it's absolutely fine. Like there's a heartbeat. The baby looks fine. Like I don't, you know, they had kind of no answers. They were like, but if you do get any more bleeding, then it's a little bit more serious. So, you know, go straight to ED if you start to bleed again. So I was initially like, oh, okay, great. Okay, everything's fine. Like, had been reassured with the scan, we were all good. And then it might have been like 24 hours later again, there was more blood. And I was like, shit, this is what they said was not good. So we did go straight to ED. And, you know, they were so busy and I didn't get seen by anyone and for like 6 hours. So it was a very, a tough waiting time, just kind of sitting around not knowing what was happening. And then finally saw a doctor who did the scan. They couldn't see what they were looking for. And I remember just seconds were going by so slowly. Willie was looking at the screen. The doctor was looking at the screen. I was lying there just like sweating and like crying, just stressed, not knowing what was happening. And then the doctor was like, look, I'm just going to go get a second opinion. And, you know, they got another doctor in. I remember that time in between the doctors coming back in, like just looking at Willie being like, this is the worst. Like, I cannot. This is so sad. You know, I was just so upset. And then the other doctor came in and he was doing the scan. And then I remember he turned the screen towards me and I was like, this is where they show me the no heartbeat. He was like, you know, there's your baby. And I was like, I remember just saying like, is your heartbeat? Where's the heartbeat? And he was like, yep, there's a heartbeat. The baby's all good. And I was like, oh my gosh, like what? And so they kind of just like, were like, you know, send us kind of on our way back home. And I think, from talking to the midwife again, there was like a little bit more blood over the next kind of couple of weeks, but it was kind of brown and very faint, so nothing of major concern. And then I had that 12 or 13 week scan, and that was fine and no problems, and there was kind of no bleeding after that point, so it was kind of unexplained. But also I was just still really scared kind of every time I would go to the bathroom, like what if there was going to be more blood there.
And did that like anxiety around that pregnancy loss and blood and all of that sort of stuff, did that subside as your pregnancy went on, or did you sort of feel like that way maybe in the back of your mind for your whole pregnancy? How did you find that?
So it was definitely in the forefront of my mind a lot. Just kind of each week it was like ticking by, like to getting closer, I guess, to the baby eventually being there. And then we had our anatomy and gender scan, which I was kind of like holding out for, because I was like, that was like, I was just couldn't wait to find out what gender it was, which was super exciting. And I remember going into that thinking, you know, I bet I'm gonna be a girl mom, like I just felt it. But we really secretly wanted a boy anyway. They were like, it's a boy, yay. And then they were like, but the placenta looks kind of low. You may have placenta previa, I'll refer you to someone else and get your midwife to chat to you. And all that kind of stuff was all brushed over. Like, I was like, it's just a little blip. Yay, we're having a boy. The baby looked healthy. All good. And then, that afternoon, I remember the midwife calling me and just being like, it's a little bit, it's pretty low. Like, it's completely covering your cervix, the placenta. So, not sure what will happen. Slim chances that it would move and you'd be able to deliver naturally. But most likely, you'll have to have a planned cesarean, and she was going to then refer me to the obstetrician at the hospital, who I then saw the next day. She was super lovely, the lady who we saw, and she kind of just explained more about the placenta previa, and kind of went into more details about that, which was all new and interesting, because I had never even heard of it, or had never heard of anyone who had previously had it. And had never planned to have a cesarean either, so everything was really different and new. And she explained that we would have to have the cesarean at about 36 or 37 weeks, as wasn't allowed to go into natural labour at all, because of the risk of hemorrhaging. And then she had said that, you know, I wasn't allowed, from that point on, no exercise, no sex, no heavy lifting, like I couldn't pick up Lennon anymore. Yeah, I was pretty much like not able to do anything really. So that was hard, and it was kind of hard with Lennon as well. She didn't really understand why I couldn't, and she was you know, often needing comfort, and I'd have to it was a hard time to not be able to give it to her and not be able to carry her as well when it was just us two.
And how did you find that mentally? Like, I just think that's so challenging when you're still relatively early in your pregnancy and you've got like a long time to go, and then they're, you know, telling you that you need to be on bed rest and not doing all of these things that you would otherwise be doing. So how did you find that?
Yeah, initially I was like, okay, that's cool. We'll just, you know, we'll just tackle this. And then I definitely found it mentally hard not being able to exercise and have kind of my release, I guess, with just being like a busy working mom running the business. Me having exercise and having me time, I had forgotten that I was actually really reliant on it for like the mental clarity and stuff. So that was tricky. Yeah, but it was definitely like, well, we've still got 20 weeks of this. So, but then I guess also another thing is that it was, at least I kind of had an understanding as to why we had bled. And maybe it wasn't, you know, the miscarriage that we thought was going to happen, and kind of had a reason for what was going on, which was, I guess, reassuring to then not have to worry about that and kind of have an understanding as to it's the placenta, that's kind of what's happening in my body, rather than it's got anything to do with the baby as such.
Cool. And what sort of happened from there? Like, I've read your story submission, so I know a little bit about what's happened. So talk us through the rest of your pregnancy journey and what happens next.
From that point on, at about 22 weeks, I went to the bathroom one night before bed, and there was blood, and I was like, shit, okay, not good. Called the midwife, and it was like, we're bleeding. She was like, okay, go straight to hospital, I'll see you there. Luckily my mum just lives like 5 minutes down the road, so she came over and was with Lennon. And Willie and I went to hospital. They did all of the tests and everything, and everything was fine, but they wanted me to stay in overnight just to check on if there was any more blood loss as well. I had a little bit of blood loss that kind of next morning, which they then gave me a steroid to make sure my uterus didn't contract, to keep everything put. There was, behind the scenes, I think everyone was quite worried, considering it was so early, the baby wouldn't be viable. And I remember friends asking me, like, how are you feeling? Like, are you worried? And I was like, no, like, I feel fine. For some reason, I wasn't stressed at that point about losing the baby. I just kind of was like, you know, I think subconsciously I had joined a Facebook group worldwide for women with placenta previa, and there was so much talk on there about people having bleeds. So in the back of my mind, I knew that bleeding was just a part of this pregnancy, and that it wasn't going to be the deciding factor. I ended up staying in hospital on bed rest for a couple of days, and they were like, you know, pretty much strict bed rest from here on out. And the obstetrician had thought that she would be seeing a lot more of me through different bleeds throughout the rest of the pregnancy. From 23 weeks to 32 weeks, if I was to have any more bleeds, I would be sent straight down to Wellington, because that's where they can look after babies of that gestation. But if it was after 32 weeks, then I would be able to stay in Whanganui. So that was definitely like a ballpark figure. Like once we got to 32 weeks, I was like, okay, we're kind of like safe in this area. And we didn't have to deal with Wellington issues. So
yeah,
we kind of finally each week ticking off, and after like just so many appointments, like I had to have extra scans, was seeing the obstetrician heaps, still seeing the midwife lots. So there was just a lot of different appointments that was kind of keeping me pretty busy. In that time, I remember having like a couple of weeks where I had really bad headaches. Lots of, my skin was really itchy at night. Like I would just sit on the couch scratching. And then those kind of symptoms went away eventually, which was great. And then I had a date booked in for our cesarean, which was going to be at 36 and 5. And that was on the 21st of September. So I was like, yay, we've got a date. And it was kind of so weird knowing that we had a date planned, considering, you know, when you go into natural labor, you've just got no idea when this baby's going to come. So that was really handy as well with the business to be able to know, you know, the date exactly. So yeah, to get to that point, it was just really slow. Like I remember, just each week we were like ticking off, getting slowly to that point. And then it was on the 31st of August, I woke up that morning feeling super nauseous, like I had morning sickness again. And I remember thinking to myself, we are done. Like we are done with this, this baby, I'm not having any more. I cannot do morning sickness again. And it was just such a weird morning. I called mom and was like, can you come take Lennon to school? Like I need to stay in bed. I just do not feel well. So stayed in bed watching Love is Blind all morning. And then threw up at about 1 o'clock. And then I remember just sitting back down and thinking, oh, and I felt it. Like I felt the blood come and I was like, holy shit. Grabbed my phone, ran to the toilet. And it was like someone had turned on a tap, the amount of blood that was pouring out of me. It was crazy. Luckily I had my phone with me, so I quickly called mom and was like, we need to go to hospital, come here straight away. She was only 5 minutes away, which is awesome. I remember sitting on the toilet with this blood pouring out of me thinking, like, how am I even going to move off here without blood being everywhere? Like, when's this going to stop? Reassuringly though, I could still feel the baby move inside of me, so I could still feel that movement, which was good. So I wasn't in too much of a panic, apart from seeing so much blood. Managed to slow the bleeding a little bit, put on an adult diaper, and hop into mum's car. We raced to the hospital, and then we're in maternity, and like honestly there was about 20 different people in there, nurses, midwives, obstetricians, anaesthetists, everyone was in there, I guess, kind of checking everything over. The, I guess the kind of collective decision was made to do an emergency cesarean that afternoon, just to, quote unquote, what my midwife said, let's quit while we're winning, just because they didn't want any more blood and didn't know, you know, how things would pan out if there was more of a hemorrhage. So I was getting prepped for theatre. I remember Willie made it in the nick of time. He works half an hour away, and during that time he was kind of racing back to get to the hospital, and he's literally walking in the corridor as I'm getting wheeled into theatre. So he, like, when he got changed, came in, which was really lucky. And then they did a they didn't know throughout the plan if it was going to be a spinal block or a general anaesthetic. My preference was a spinal, so I could be kind of present and awake and have a, you know, Willie or mum in there with me. So they were like, we'll start with a spinal, and if things go, you know, funny, then we'll do a general. So that was kind of the plan. So I started with a spinal. And then, I remember just, it was awful, feeling just so nauseous. I couldn't breathe. The anxiety was just intense. And there were definitely moments in it where I was thinking, maybe I'll just ask for a general, maybe I can just be wiped out because I don't want to be a part of this at the moment. Like, it was just, I was just felt rotten. Then had started throwing up. So, like, throwing up in that process, like, unable to move my head to the side. Like, it was just so unpleasant. And then, finally, so they did a cesarean. They did a... so a vertical classical incision. So the cut went from my belly button to my pubic bone. And they had to do that type of incision rather than the horizontal one, because the placenta, not only was it previa and completely covering the cervix, it was slightly anterior. So where they would have done that normal cut, that was where the placenta was. And so if they had have done that, I would have just cut straight through the placenta and the hemorrhage would have been maybe uncontrollable. So they kind of had to reassess, even though a classical vertical incision wasn't like really done. I don't think Whanganui Hospital had ever done one, because I remember they were like, can this person come watch? Can this person come watch? Like, there was just everyone was kind of a bit fascinated about it because it wasn't the norm. As well as being placenta previa, so in high risk. So everyone was kind of super hands-on and interested. And I was like, that's fine. Like, if this is going to be a learning curve for everyone, then, like, that's totally cool, because, you know, this is what happens in the real world. So, yeah, they cut me open and Reggie came out. He actually came out still in the sack, which was awesome. And then... he, you know, went and had his checks and everything, and there, at that point, I remember, because of my fear from getting to hospital to that point was so much about the safety and health of my baby, I felt really stressed. And I remember just thinking and saying, like, 100 times, is he okay, is the baby okay, like, what's happening, and just being, feeling a lot of stress. And, you know, every time they'd be like, yep, he's doing good. And, but I just, because he wasn't on me and next to me, I just felt that stress and kind of that, really that fear. And then, and then finally he was still, he was there and he was next to me and I was still like, is he okay? Like, is he breathing? And then finally, we went into recovery and I get to, hold him, and he was still on me for a little bit. Which was really nice. And then they took him to Skibo. So Willie went with Reggie to Skibo. And I went into the maternity ward with Mum. And yeah, so Reggie was doing really well. They weren't worried about him or anything, but they needed to keep him in there for monitoring and everything. So yeah, his gestation was 33 and 5 days. So, yeah, he was pretty early. He was born at 5 pounds 2. So they were really happy with that weight, considering his gestation. So there wasn't too much fear around that. And actually, as we were going through the pregnancy, I remember them saying, you know, he's, you know, measuring quite big, so we're not too worried about him coming early and that sort of thing, which was really reassuring. And then, so yeah, while he was in Skibo, he had the CPAP machine on for a couple of hours just to help with his breathing and I guess stress from birth. And yeah, and then he was okay. And they kind of, I think it was that night, they wheeled me in the bed to go and see him and to have some skin on skin and then, to try and latch. To be honest, all of this was a bit of a blur just because of the drugs and, you know, everything. And I was still completely lying down, which was just such a strange way to kind of, like, you know, try. And I could, I remember they had to raise the bed up so high for me to be able to see inside the incubator, because the incubator is actually really high. They're at eye level, so, well, hand level. So it was, it was really funny. The nurse was really short and the bed was so high, she couldn't even, like, reach me up on the bed. and then, so tried to latch him, and not much luck. I mean, he was tiny. His mouth was small. He had a really yeah, it was definitely, there was not much of a latch. The the nurses in Skibbo were amazing, though. From the get-go, they were like, here's a nipple shield, put this on, because, you know, his latch is going to be really shallow and he's going to be really weak, so he needs kind of all the help he can get. But from my experience with using nipple shields with Lennon, I wasn't worried about that at all. And I was like, oh, yeah, I know how these work, like, and they worked. So I was kind of, yeah, glad to be using something that helped. And he definitely, you know, latched with them, and he was able to, yeah, try and start feeding and stimulating my supply. So from kind of that point on, it was 3 hourly. So it was, you know, I would go in, feed him, and then go back to the room and hand express for a little bit to try get any colostrum. And then they would feed that to him by a syringe. And I remember it just being the smallest amounts, like it was, you know, 0.1 mil, like one drop. And I'd be like, yes, this is so good. and the other side would get nothing. And I'd be like, oh. And it went on kind of like that for a couple of days, just barely anything. And I remember the pressure kind of started to rise with the Skibbo nurses. They were like, you know, he's going to need to feed soon. You know, we might have to do some top ups. And I was like, oh my gosh, me personally, because of my breastfeeding with Lennon, I was like, I cannot, like, I know how to breastfeed, my body can do this. And I just really didn't want to him to have formula as well as being so early. I just knew that my breast milk was the best thing for him. And we were really lucky because a nurse in Skibbo had suggested maybe we could try and get our hands on some donor milk. In Whanganui, there wasn't a donor a milk bank, but there was one in Palmerston North, which is an hour away. So we had teed that up, and my husband went to pick it up that afternoon, like on day two, I think it was. And he got six bottles, which was amazing. So then we were able to start giving Reggie some of that through the syringe. And then they ended up putting a feeding tube in to be able to give it to him that way. So I would still breastfeed to try get the supply. Then they would give him the top up with the express, so the donor milk, and then I would do pumping. That kind of was the start. And anything, I guess, that I got from the pumping, which, to be honest, at that point wasn't much, they would give him before the donor milk. And then it was about day four, and they were like, they were wanting to discharge me from maternity ward and move me in to it's called mother crafting when you're in there with a baby who's in Skibbo. So I was a patient, I wasn't a patient of the hospital anymore, I was kind of Reggie's guest, I guess. And so I moved rooms, and it was right next door to Skibbo anyway, so it was really easy being that close to him. I was only a couple of doors down prior, but it was, yeah, really nice and close. And so, yeah, I think that night that I was in there, it all came on. Like, the milk came in, my boobs were super engorged. Willie was no longer staying with me in hospital because, like, he couldn't anymore. And I remember just being there alone, and just, definitely feeling the baby blues come on then, and just kind of having a bit of a cry. But there was also that relief of knowing that my milk had come in, which was, really, really good. So I was able to feed him more, breastfeeding. And then, I guess as the days kind of went on and that milk came in, we didn't need the donor milk so much. My pumping supply was enough to then feed him through the tube after breastfeeding, because his latch and suck and everything wasn't that strong, he wasn't able to get as much milk as they were happy with through breastfeeding, so they were still doing top ups for about a week. And so he eventually came out of the incubator and was in a hot cot, still with the feeding tube. And then once he came off monitoring, they were like, we can move the hot cot into the room with you, which was really cool. And they were still checking his weight, and he was progressing really well. He was, he was gaining little bit by little bit, not much. He was still tiny. And then, went what happened next? I think slowly they were like, every time they we took him out of the hot cot, they would check his temperature. So he was dressed in so many different layers, plus blankets, and he was in this heated hot cot. So the main goal was to get him stabilizing his own temperature. So there was every time he was up, it was a temperature check, and they were seeing how it was going. And then eventually they started being able to turn the temperature down to nothing, which was really amazing. And so each, I guess, stage, it was getting closer to us being able to take him home into, you know, the normal a normal household and no support of the hospital. So yeah, and then they managed to, they were happy with his breastfeeding, and they wanted to make sure he had gained enough weight from exclusive breastfeeding before they took out the nasal tube. So we had to make sure he was, you know, gaining enough just from exclusive breastfeeding, no top-ups for a couple of days. And that was all good. He was progressing well. So the tube came out. And so we were still in there for maybe a couple of days after that to make sure everything was still doing as it, you know, he was still gaining weight as he should.
Mm-hmm.
And so he was in there for 10 days total, and then we got to take him home.
Wow, that's incredible after being born so early, right?
Yeah, he was doing so well, and everyone was really impressed with how well he was progressing and reaching his milestones. So I remember people thinking that we might have, you know, and midwives and the doctors and stuff thinking that we might have been in there for another month. But he was doing so well, and, you know, at such a good birth weight as well, which was definitely on his side. But so we were still in hospital, and I remember looking at Reggie while he was sleeping, and I saw his kind of tongue. And I was like, oh, I think he's tongue-tied. Like, I saw the band. And I remember asking the doctors and the midwives and nurses and stuff, you know, do you think he's tongue-tied? And in Whanganui Hospital, they're actually anti kind of tongue-tie snipping. It's just the paediatricians are not for it at that particular hospital. Yep. So talking to friends who had babies in that hospital as well, and they said there's a place, there's a doctor's clinic in Palmerston North that you can take them to privately and they can snip it. So we managed to get a booking on the week after we got back home. So we had to take him down there to get that snipped, which was good because, I mean, he was already going to have, you know, his young gestation, you know, being hard enough on his muscles and strength and small mouth and everything. We didn't need any extra complications with latching. So I was like, let's just get that sorted before we try come off the nipple shields as well. Which I managed to stop using them after about 2 weeks of being at home. So I only probably used them for, I guess 3-4-ish weeks, which was really good. His latch was strong enough, and there was no damage to my nipples, which was the best thing. So we weren't kind of on the back foot.
Awesome. And how did you feel taking him home? Like, did you have any anxiety about, like, him being born prematurely and just, like, being in SCBU, and you've obviously got, like, the doctors and nurses around should you need them? Or did you just feel, like, confident and ready that he was ready to go home? How did you find that?
Yeah, so it was a bit of a funny feeling. Like, it was like, our baby's progressed, he's doing really well, we can go home, like, we don't need that support, and everything was looking really good. But it was also, that kind of scare and fearfulness of being all on our own and not having that support 24/7. So really had planned to take 2 weeks off work, which was amazing to be able to help me. Because I guess of the recovery of my wound as well. So while I was still in hospital, we noticed actually it had started to become infected in a certain spot. So I was on antibiotics, which, it was just really slow at healing and just so hard to be able to rest and recover when you're, you know, up and all that kind of thing. So, I was a little bit worried about coming home, but I was like, let's just rip the band-aid off. Let's just get home and get into it. It took probably a good week, I guess, of settling in, and it was like a whole nother kind of baby blues in a way, when we got home. It was like, yeah, just kind of, I don't know, this like weird kind of feeling of just being like, well, we're here. A strange kind of feeling of loneliness, because when you're in the hospital, it's like all go, it's all hands on, and these nurses are just so caring and helpful and amazing, and you know that you're just like in the arms of the hospital if anything was to go wrong. So I remember definitely feeling that kind of settling in period was quite tough, and still feeling really fragile emotionally and having little breakdowns and stuff. And then I guess we were still doing some of the things, like I was cautiously like still wrapping him in lots of merino clothing and blankets, and keeping the rooms really warm, checking his temperature, you know, for a good couple of weeks to make sure he was still okay, because I was just worried that, you know, that was the easiest way we could find out if he was warm enough. So yeah, it was definitely an adjustment period coming home and kind of settling in with like a premature baby, and then like Lennon, who was at daycare, and the germs, and I was like, don't touch him. I was just like, you know, but trying not to be too precious about it. So I remember we got home and put hand sanitizer, like bottles of hand sanitizer, all over the house for like anyone who was to come inside. You know, I was really conscious of that.
I know that's really hard when you've got an older child out in the world and picking up lots of germs, and probably even more so when you've got a baby who's born prematurely. So I can definitely understand that. And how did you find the like transition from one to two, and how did Lennon go adjusting to being a big sister? Like, how did you find all of that?
Yeah, so it was, she was actually really good. She felt it really tough when I was still in hospital with Reggie for those 10 days. Luckily, she was with mum, but she was definitely playing up, and she was really emotional and sensitive and fragile with the whole time, which was so hard on me. I remember her coming in to the hospital to visit me and stuff, and she just wouldn't want to leave, and she'd be screaming down the halls, and I was like, my heart was breaking for her. So it was a tough time then, but once we were home, actually, she settled in so well. She she kind of, the age gap for us, I think, has been perfect. There hasn't been much jealousy. She's not rough, she's really gentle, she's super helpful if I need her to go grab something. I mean, there's definitely times where she's like running around super loud and she wakes Richie up and I'm like, oh, can you not? But all in all, she's a really great big sister, and has settled in to her little role super well.
Good girl. Cool. And what about your physical recovery from the C-section? Like, obviously such a different birth to your first. So how did you find the recovery this time, and the comparison to a vaginal birth?
Yeah, such a different birth. And from having a vaginal birth the first time around with like not really noticing any recovery, this time round was awful, to be honest. The pain was just not pleasant. It was painful all the time. That infection lasted for quite a while. I ended up getting 5 different infection sites throughout, I think it was about 10 weeks. So it only just stopped being infected in an area like last couple of weeks. So the healing process has taken a really long time, that vertical incision is huge. It you cannot wear any underwear that makes it comfortable, because it's from the belly button. It's like the high-waisted stuff kind of hit the top, and the low-waisted like pregnancy maternity underwear that would go under your belly would hit the bottom of the incision. So there was no way. And then I couldn't not wear any underwear because I was still bleeding. It was so hard to be comfortable really with anything I was wearing. And then even I felt like if I didn't wear anything at all, any clothing that touched the incision was, it was so sore, like it was just really sensitive. The healing process has been really, really rough. Just in comparison to having nothing the first time round.
I've had both a cesarean and a vaginal birth, but the standard incision with a cesarean, and like that was difficult enough to find like comfortable underwear. So yeah, I can't imagine it with a vertical incision and like different infection sites. It's just, yeah, awful. And how do you find it now? Like, I know Redu's only 11 weeks old, so are you still noticing any like discomfort or challenges with having had a C-section?
Yeah, I mean, it's been so slow, and because I've because of the infection, it's like it's been hard to be able to know like what I can and can't do as well, like the generic like 6 week mark for most other people's cesareans. For me, it kind of like I was still infected by 10 weeks, so it was like everything was just so slow. And you know, after having a cesarean, I felt like my tummy was still kind of really puffy and inflamed and swollen for quite some time. So mentally I was like, oh, I kind of wanted to get back exercising and to kind of start feeling good again, but everything was so much slower that I couldn't because of the recovery. So my midwife has now said that I can get back kind of like properly exercising from 3 months, so I've got another week and I can maybe get back to the gym. But I've been, you know, like walking and things like that, and able to lift you know, the pram and things like that. I still don't really carry Lennon. She's really tall and I think she's quite heavy. So I guess from not carrying her for the last almost year, I've kind of just gotten out of the habit of that, which is good. But yeah, I think just from taking so many antibiotics as well, like my gut health wasn't good. I wasn't feeling the best. I felt like my tummy was like such a reminder from what I had gone through that I couldn't kind of like recover from, if that makes sense. Like I was like, you know, like it was just still continuing, which was just a daily reminder that I kind of didn't have my own body back, which was really hard. It's just been such a slow, long recovery.
That is difficult, right? Like you've got a new baby who was born early and a toddler running around and all of these different things, like trying to add the layer of a challenging birth recovery is really hard.
And I mean, I was still even having like appointments, like the district nurses were coming around to check the wound and dress it, and then you just do different swabs, and it was just pretty relentless. I'm like, I was still having the midwife come around and the nurses, and then Plunkett started coming and I was still seeing the obstetrician. Like there was still just so many things and I just wanted it to kind of settle and calm down a little bit.
Fair enough. And how are you finding life as a mum of two now? And talk us through what that looks like for you day to day at the moment.
So thankfully for daycare, Lennon goes there pretty much full time, so it's kind of the hustle of getting everyone ready and out of the door and drop offs, and then kind of doing work throughout the day, which I've never been able to stop. I do have an employee who's been able to keep doing treatments at the clinic, which has been amazing, but the other side of the business, the admin side and everything, I still have never been able to switch off from the whole time, which is very consuming. There's definitely been days where I've just been really overwhelmed with the lack of sleep, stress and just kind of overwhelm, but we're getting through it.
It's really hard. I think like it's just when you can't actually switch off, like you typically go on parental leave right from a job, but owning your own business, like even having to do the admin side of it is a lot. I've found that really challenging with Ali, so I can definitely relate to that experience of just like not actually just being able to fully switch off and just be you and your baby. There's always something else that you need to do, which can be really hard.
Absolutely, just not having that switch off and to be present. You kind of never get to have a day off, really, hey? But I mean, it's a blessing and a curse, you know.
It is, for sure. Absolutely.
Awesome. And is there anything else that we haven't covered that you feel like is important in your story that you want to add?
I remember kind of another part of the baby blues that I was dealing with this time that I hadn't with Lennon was that I felt like I was grieving the loss of my pregnancy because of having a premature baby and having him so early. So that was an interesting thing to navigate, was feeling that kind of loss and grief over my pregnancy, which just seemed so crazy and strange, because the whole time you're so excited and amped for the baby to be born, but then because it happened so quick and early, I was like, hang on, where's my pregnancy, that, you know, my big belly, and just feeling that kind of like that beauty and the excitement as well. So that was an interesting thing to be dealing with this time around, that I didn't the first as well. And I'm sure if anyone also had a premature baby, they'd probably have felt similar. So
For sure. I think that's a really good shout. Like, so many mums will feel the same way who've had a premature baby. So thank you for sharing that.
Cool. Well, thank you so much, Millie, for coming on the podcast and sharing your stories with me today. I've really loved talking to you, and I know that there'll be a lot of people who take something from your episode, but in particular the placenta previa, I think is a really important topic to discuss and raise awareness about, and just help those who might be experiencing something similar hear a story that is similar to theirs. So I'm very grateful for you coming on the podcast today and sharing with us.
Thank you so much for having me.
Thanks so much for tuning in to this week's episode of Kiwi Birth Tales. I hope you have enjoyed it, and I really appreciate you being here. Wherever you're listening, if you've got the option to leave me a star review, that would be amazing. I love hearing from you, and it helps other people find the podcast as well. I'd also love to hear from you on Instagram if you want to find me at Kiwi Birth Tales, or send me an email, jordan@kiwibirthtales.com. I will be back in your ears next week.
Hold up. What was that? Boring. No flavor. That was as bad as those leftovers you ate all week. Keke Palmer here. And it's time to say hello to something fresh and guilt-free. HelloFresh. Jazz up dinner with pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Now that's music to my mouth. HelloFresh. Let's get this dinner party started. Discover all the delicious possibilities at HelloFresh.com.